You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Susan Sontag once wrote that the camera makes everyone a tourist in other people's reality and eventually in one's own. But there's nothing touristy about the images Sue Kwan takes of New York City, whether there are people engaged in everyday activities or portraits of celebrities on their way to becoming superstars. Her new book, Street Level, New York Photographs, 1987 to 2007, is a collection of 20 years of her black and white images. It's published by Testify Books, and I'm very pleased that it brings Sue Kwan to our show today. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
You had to condense 20 years of photographs into a little over 200 pages, so you must have had to make some difficult choices. What were your criteria for inclusion?
Well, the first criteria was it was not to be a family and friends book. Obviously, after shooting for so many years and shooting in the neighborhoods that I actually lived and was immersed in, you know, my concern with the editor was, you know, I have to put this person in and that person, you know. And then she, thank goodness, she took the rein and said, no, it's about the image. The neighborhood is what the photograph is telling you. So she was a very big part in helping me, you know, choose.
And the book is broken into what feel like photo essays on various sections of the city. You say you were living in those cities when you were doing those pictures?
Well, not necessarily living in those neighborhoods, but the book is broken up into sections of, say, you know, there's Brooklyn, Chinatown, Little Italy. Little Italy happens to be a very big chapter because many of my years were spent living there. So, you know, obviously there's a lot of story behind that.
There's also Harlem. There's
yes.
A number of other city sections. Were they taken on assignment?
No. Actually, I would some of these photos of, you know, celebrities, they were tangents of an assignment. Most of those were just photos I would take after the actual assignment was shot, because I do prefer taking them where they're more natural or relaxed, not like it's a studio setting. So the documentary street shots, most of them were just me walking around with my camera obsessively for, I mean, unknown reasons back then, except that I really felt like, you know, the power of that shutter, just clicking that 1 second, kind of kept that moment in time forever for me. I mean, it wasn't about me trying to, you know, document it for a certain reason or anything. I just was obsessed with stopping that time.
And then you'd go back again. So what's one of the things that's interesting about New York is how much it's changed over the 20 years that you've been taking pictures.
Yes. I mean, it's definitely, I mean, obviously it's a city that's always, always changing, but after going through these photos recently and not seeing them for many years, it really shocked me at how much things have disappeared, actually. Even that, you know, there's lots of photos in there where the, you know, the building or the people who owned it are no longer there. I mean,
gentrification has changed pretty much every neighborhood. Have any remained static?
From my experience, I would say no.
You have a whole section devoted to Times Square. Now, that's a neighborhood that's changed almost totally over the last 20 years.
Yes.
Do you like those changes? There were some people who felt that we were losing something by cleaning up Times Square.
Yes. I mean, I think it's very popular to bemoan that, you know, obviously the change of all of New York, and then, you know, the popular thing with Times Square is the Disneyfication of it. I do miss, you know, a lot of those parts of Times Square that were, say,
sleazy, raunchy,
you know,
colorful.
textural. And
well, it's part of your job is to find colorful things. You're not going into a neighborhood and saying, oh, gee, I'm looking for the most boring neighborhood. I only want to shoot boring things.
Right. That's, I mean, that was part of, you know, the charm of it, definitely. You just don't, you didn't know what would come at you. You know, you would just, I could stand in one spot and literally have 10 different subjects. And a lot of, when I look at the contact sheets, you know, I may have one, maybe two of that person or moment. You know, not like today with a digital camera, you have 300 of the same image. Or
so when you went back over those negatives, did you discover that negatives that you didn't take very seriously at the time now looked really interesting to you, and some of the ones that you thought were really great at the time now didn't seem as interesting?
Yes, definitely. I mean, that was definitely a
Is that because your aesthetic changes as you get older?
Maybe not an aesthetic, because I think even today, I don't really know what drives me to take a particular picture or an image, except that maybe that it's obviously it's interesting to me and it's personal. So perhaps what was very personal to me then became either less personal or, you know, just trivial, and maybe other things became more important.
Well, when you're shooting with film, as you point out, you don't come up with as many images. So you really have to be very careful about when you put your finger on that button. When you're shooting digitally, you can go ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch.
Yes. No, and that's what I mean, I still actually prefer digital. I'm sorry, that was completely wrong. I prefer film, analog, over digital.
Do you shoot mostly that way? Because these pictures are all black and white. I'm not even. Can you do black and white digital?
Yes, you can. You can do black and white digital, but it's not black and white film. And you know, that is one thing that I feel, going back and look at, yeah, the contact sheets, it was very special to see you had like one or two of like a person, and you can get a great shot. And it wasn't like you stood there and shot, you know, 300 of them, and then you're. I feel like it's your approach towards the subject and the moment is definitely different than today's world with a digital camera.
There have been a number of wonderful photographers who've taken pictures of street life in New York. Helen Levitt, Rudy Burkhardt, Bruce Davidson, Walter Rosenblum, Sylvia Plachy. How do you find a distinctive style and voice when you've had all these predecessors?
I think finding your own distinctive voice would be, obviously, you know, I am aware, I'm definitely, you know, I've had those people's photographs ingrained in my mind, you know, so I can.
And I'm sure there are any number of others.
Right, and, you know, there's people you admire, but I think just for me, it's very personal. Like when I hold the camera and I'm trying to shoot, you know, say that person or the truck moving, you know, I'm holding the camera, and for me, it's just all about what I'm thinking, and not to sound, you know, what is the word? I can't, not to sound.
You're not thinking
pompous
of yourself as part of history at that moment.
No, it's a very personal moment as far as, you know, what I see. And I'm not trying to think, oh, this has to look good this way or that way. It's just an organic moment that I choose. You know, and some people may hate it and some people may love it. But for me, it's what's important, what I get out of it.
And I've always found that fascinating, that one photographer, Cartier-Bresson's finger would have hit the button probably at a better moment than my finger would have hit the button. But, you know, great photographers just have that sense of when to take the shot that fits in with their personal way of doing things.
And I, you know, obviously every person brings in their own prejudices or, you know, judgmental croppings of the image that they think is good, obviously, but I think it has to do with how you perceive that moment or the person. I mean, for me, it was very important that I was shooting, obviously, a lot of people I did not know. So for me, though, I wanted to make sure that those people had my attention or knew me. I would always ask them, you know, if it was okay to take their picture. I didn't want to just shoot on the fly and run. It was important that they had a connection with me, even for those, whatever, 5 minutes that I may have been there.
And that is a concern for street photographers, isn't it? Some people get upset if you're taking their picture without their permission.
Yeah, I always want to be respectful towards the person, you know, that I found interesting. And if they say no, I would always, you know, just back away.
But then again, they're posing for you as a result. Is that okay with you?
You mean?
Once they know you're going to take their picture, they become slightly different than they do if they're just standing there casually.
Oh, I see what you're saying, yes. Well, right, that's how you have the different moments of photographers who say, you know, you see people passing by or there's no rapport with the person behind the camera. Yes, once you do approach them and just talk to them, they definitely are posing for you. But then if you spend enough time with them, I like to try to get it where they're more comfortable with me, perhaps, and then they kind of just let their guard down, you know, if that's what we can call it, and give me a moment that's still unposed.
Sue Kwan's collection of photographs called Street Level, New York Photographs, 1987-2007, has an introduction by Hilton Alls of The New Yorker. You grew up in New Haven. How did you wind up taking all these pictures of New York City?
Because Manhattan was where I always wanted to be.
Had you been taking pictures since you were very young?
No, I hadn't, actually. You know, it was very willy-nilly the way it came about. I remember using my dad's camera once and I broke it, so then I never used a camera again for many years. And then somehow by accident, I stumbled into this show, a Sebastião Salgado show. I had no idea who he was or anything, and there were these black and white photos of the Sahel Desert. And it just suddenly, I mean, I wasn't into art or anything, you know, just more teenager shopping at the Salvation Army and doing those crazy things. Those photos just, you know, stopped me in my tracks. And from there, I just suddenly got interested into photography.
I'm glad you mentioned Salgado because he was a guest on the show once and a listener called in and said anybody who had his equipment and had the kind of access he had could take those great photographs. And I said, you're out of your mind. Because his work is so individual. And all the great photographers, you have a style here. If people know Su Quan's work, they're going to look at one of these photographs and say, hey, that looks like something that Su Quan took.
Thank you.
But I'm sure that that's something you've thought a lot about.
Well, yes, like that. Earlier you were asking about, you know, influences and other photographers. Sebastião Salgado, obviously, he pretty much, those images, you know, made me turn more towards picking up a camera and starting to do it again. But I don't think my images are, you know, they don't, I don't think they evoke his, mm-mm, you know, emotions or what they depict, you know, so.
What was your first professional photography job?
My first, probably, I would say maybe, from what I could recall, sorry, under the heavy heat lamp, I was shooting inmates at Rahway State Prison, mm-hmm, for a record they were doing.
So recording. So
yes, my friend was helming the project, and he, you know, he knew I just loved to document anything and everything, and he invited me to go in, which was a great opportunity because you know, can't just go into a jail.
And then once you sell photographs, then you can have start thinking of it as a profession.
If you choose to, I guess. I mean, I still did many other things. I did that, you know, and that led to the early Source magazine, which, you know, needed photos of those inmates, you know, recording. And that's how I segued into the, you know, hip-hop world, the early hip-hop world.
And you have people engage in sports here, but there's a whole sub-theme here, and that is the early hip-hop world. A lot of the most famous hip-hop artists are, you took pictures of them before they were as famous as they are.
Yes.
How did you know that Jay-Z was going to become somebody who would be important, for example?
Oh, well, honestly, I did not know. it was just another, you know, fun subject to shoot and, you know, try to think of a cool idea and photograph them. I had no, actually, yes, I had no, you know, eye for talent, per se, with that part.
Well, you have a photograph of him. And the caption under it says, a somber Jay-Z photographed the month after the death of Biggie Smalls. He arrived at the shoot sans entourage and 10 minutes early. That was in 1997. Why was it noteworthy that he arrived without his entourage and 10 minutes early? Is that a rarity in the hip-hop world?
That's interesting you asked that. I never thought of that, actually. Yes, and especially... Well, it was 97. That was probably, it's not really the early days, obviously, but it was still when there weren't so many people, you know, there weren't, he didn't have a team, like publicists, you know, managers, agents, you know, the whole team that kind of keep you from them. I mean, I was given his number and told to call him and just arrange a photo shoot. I mean, that's unheard of in today's, you know, world of media, music media. Mm-hmm. And he, especially
Hi,
being
I'm
early.
Sue.
Yes. I mean, his number, I don't know if it was his house or what, but, you know, so that's definitely notable because it's just completely, you know, not possible in today's world.
A few pages later, you have a two-page spread of a private listening party in 1997 for the rapper Notorious B.I.G.'s album Life After Death, and you write that 11 days later, Biggie was dead, and Life After Death entered the Billboard charts at number one on March 25th.
Yes, and that... that also is pretty interesting because, again, going back to digital and film, I hadn't even sent the film. The film hadn't even been processed at the lab yet when the news broke that he passed. So, you know, suddenly I got the calls to hurry up and send the film, and it was FedEx, you know, not computerized, sent via computer or anything. But, yes, that was pretty shocking because it was, you know, one moment he was right there.
Well, this book is all black and white, and it does capture a certain kind of grittiness. Do you shoot color as well?
Yeah, now I do. It's funny because back then I actually, for some reason, just detested color. I always felt it wasn't true or didn't show, you know, things as organic as they were. I mean, that was just the thinking I had back then. I just really didn't like that a red shirt would suddenly be in the image. So I have grown to embrace color, yes, now, but I still prefer black and white.
And there are some wonderful things, images here that remind us of a New York that has lost, even though we're only talking about 20 years. There's an elderly couple in Chinatown who posed for you amidst all of the popping of fireworks, something that used to drive me crazy when I lived in Chinatown.
Do you miss it now?
No.
But yes, that...
It kept me awake at night.
I do. Well, it's very sad because now when I go photograph, there's just people running around with boomboxes playing firecracker sounds. So it's a little bit odd for me, but but yes, that's gone.
You also captured CBGBs before that disappeared. Was the particular image of the shot outside of CBGBs taken during one of their Sunday hardcore matinees?
Yes, that was actually, again, because I was... a lot of these pictures are, you know, obviously offshoots of what I was interested in at the time. So, you know, we would go to the shows and, you know, I would also just have my camera and then shoot while we were not inside or just hanging out kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Are you still working the same way? Obviously, you can't call a celebrity today and say, hi, I'm Sue. But I guess with a growing reputation, you still wind up finding it easier to gain access to some of these people.
No.
I mean, you can't say,
I have not
hey,
found
yeah.
that yet. Maybe after this interview. No, it's a little, there are definitely more avenues you have to take, it seems like. Like I said, there's, you know, buffers. There's the agent, the publicist, the label, all that stuff. So if I know people directly, of course, it's easier that way, but...
And it is interesting. We have the same problem sometimes booking certain guests. They put up huge firewalls, and then you meet the person, and you say, you know, I would have loved to have had you on the show. I'm sure you would have said, I'd love to have taken some pictures of you. And they say, well, why didn't you? And they have no idea that there are all these people there who think that they're protecting them. You're nodding your head.
Yes. Yes, I'm nodding my
head. When you look back at your photographs now, do you remember what you were thinking when you took the shot?
These particular photos? Yes. I mean, I pretty, as you can see, most of them are dated. I was pretty particular about, you know, recording things and dating things, and I do remember the moments pretty clearly.
If somebody was interested in getting into this kind of photojournalism, are there schools to go to, or would you suggest that they just go out and take pictures and discover whether they have talent or not?
I'm sure there are schools. You know, of course, there are many art schools and photo departments, but I feel that it's very important that they, you know, just pick up the camera, go about doing it. Even if they look at other photographers that they admire, perhaps, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. And looking at it, you know, you don't want to copy their work, you know, exactly. But I feel, you know, not to sound corny, but it has to come from inside of you, and the passion just really would, you know, drive you.
I have to be honest. If I knew that I could take pictures that look just like Robert Frank's pictures, I would take them.
But have you tried?
I'm not good enough. Sue Kwan's book, which has some wonderful photographs in it, is called Street Level, New York Photographs, 1987-2007. It's published by Testify Books in a large format, all black and white shots, but really some incredibly powerful images. And I want to thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you very much.
Up next, Constance Rosenblum looks at the history of one of New York's great boulevards, the Grand Concourse in the Bronx, which was built 100 years ago and modeled after the Champs-Élysées. This is WNYC and WNYC.org.